Hello and welcome to this week's Coaching In, where I'm in conversation with Naomi Kraft and Sue Morrison. We've known each other for a long time, haven't we, Sue and Naomi? Would you like to introduce yourselves to our audience this morning?
Sue, do you start?
Okay, I'll go. I'm a GP by background, and I've worked in education a lot, particularly in the health sector, but I've been coaching for quite a lot of years, coaching and training and supervising, and I met Claire through that work. And I suppose I'm at a time of life when I'm working very eclectically, so it's quite hard to say who I am, but those are the bones of it.
Yes, I'm noticing there's who you are and what you do.
Okay.
But that's a different conversation, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's true. Actually, I've just had my 70th birthday, and that actually links to our topic in some ways, I think, because it does focus me on mortality a bit and various losses and living our losses as we grow older.
Yeah.
So we can come back to that.
And moving into a different season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Naomi.
Yeah, so like Sue, I'm also a GP by background, and I've kind of always been a portfolio GP. I've always had lots of other things that I've been interested in. And at the root of that has been about connection and communication and about supporting people to be the best that they can be, whether it be a patient or a colleague or a student or a family member. That's who I am, I think. And I was just really fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time when I was offered this opportunity to coach at the same time as Sue about 15 years ago. And so we've sort of evolved through the coaching process on parallel tracks, but being really engaged by what's possible. And so I've now currently I've morphed into being more of a full-time coach and educator. So I spend a lot of my time working with junior doctors, and I've reduced my clinical commitment down to nothing in the last year. Nothing to do with COVID, actually. I had made that decision just before COVID to focus on education and coaching. And I went back in as a doctor during COVID, I really feel like I'm in my next career now as a coach and educator. I also spend quite a lot of time working with doctors in difficulty. So I work for an organisation which provides courses in remediation. So these are courses about insight, really, for people who have found themselves in difficulty with the regulator, not just doctors. And it's coaching in another way. It's another form of coaching. So it's an opportunity for them to really get who they are as a human being and how they're showing up and how that's part of what's led them to the difficulties that they find themselves in. So I'm absolutely fascinated by this place that I've ended up and really excited. I had a conversation with a supervisor some years ago who said, just continue to reach towards the things that give you joy and that give you energy. And so I've continued to do that. So every day I sit down at my desk and I never quite know which hat I'm going to have on. And every day I feel really excited by it. It's lovely. It's really lovely.
Fantastic.
And I have this great joy of working with Sue, Sue and I, our paths crossed multiple times, but about, I don't know how many years ago it was, Sue, when we decided to work more formally together. Can you remember?
No, I think it's about 10 years ago, is it? I don't know. I was just thinking as you were talking, though, you're describing the Marie Kondo of coaching, you know, that we only do things that bring us joy. And I thought, well, that's quite nice to think about that, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Help others do things that bring them joy.
I cannot say that things are neatly folded, though, in my mind.
No.
So both of you are quite eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your focuses is around death and dying and bereavement and loss.
Yes.
So just say a bit more about that, because some people I've spoken to in the last couple of days have gone, oh, I didn't know that that was a place where coaching was. So please tell us more.
Yes, well, I think that was in the mix for us as well. So Naomi will talk for herself, but I became particularly interested in loss when I had a situation in my own family with an estrangement of a close family member. And that actually linked with an opportunity you provided, Claire, when we met the wonderful Don Eisenhower, who was doing similar work in the States, and we had the opportunity to train with him. So I felt I had a real felt knowledge of loss and not knowing what to do with it and wanting more than counselling around it, really. I wanted to recover some of my agency and to feel that I could do something. And it seemed to me that the coaching provided an opportunity to think things through in a forward way, that the, you know, that I wasn't completely impotent, I could do something with it. And so that was the energy that I took into the training. And I had always really enjoyed, it's a strange thing to say, but I did enjoy working with patients who and families of patients who were dying. I felt it was a very, as a GP, it was a very intimate and special time. And there was often a sort of clarity about it, because the thing is a bit like my saying about being 70, you know, people were focused on loss and illness and death, and actually all the other noise often just vanished. Things were distilled down to things that really mattered. Yes, and so we've developed from there. I could talk some more, but I'm
Sue and I talked about we found actually there was some crossovers in our experience, because actually I came into the interest in coaching around end of life and coaching around loss not through personal experience, but then I found my personal experiences were happening to coincide with this, in that after I started learning about coaching at end of life and coaching for loss and bereavement, I then had a massive loss in my family, in that my sister was suddenly diagnosed with one of those horrible cancers that just finished her off very quickly. And so I was going through that myself and also learning about it simultaneously. And so what has happened is that Sue and I have had this wonderful experience of learning about something but also living it. So we've had initially pre-lockdown, we were meeting regularly, having conversations with each other and bringing that into our learning and bringing that into developing some training for others. So it was very joined up. It came from our personal experience. But what we also realized, and it seems so obvious, doesn't it, but that actually none of what we were experiencing is unique to us. We're all dying. You know, it's just that we don't realize it until we're up close and personal with it, either because we have a massive loss or because we experience an illness which threatens ourselves and our mortality. So it was a sudden realization, well, we could bring this to others before they reach that point. We could bring that to people who are looking after those who are experiencing some kind of loss. We could bring that also to the people who are in the process of dying. So we began to realize that this was a very big area that could be unpicked, and we could begin to provide support in lots of different ways to people. We also realized that, of course, there are lots and lots of little losses that occur at all times, all the way along the way. And, you know, it could be, you know, loss of when we're going to get our hair colored, you know, loss of the fact that we could have managed without that. You know, there are all sorts of losses along the way related to aging. retirement, we also realised was a huge loss. So we've had lots of conversations and spin-off conversations that started from a conversation around death.
Can I just pick up on what you both said? Yeah. So it's interesting how thinking about it in advance makes such a difference.
Mm.
So Don Eisenhower works for Coaching at End of Life in the States, listeners, and we'll put a link in the program notes. And in fact, he's done a podcast. If you go back, you'll find a podcast with him. But I invited him over to the UK to do a tour. And we went to a number of places and you joined us at one of them to talk about coaching at end of life. But we did a day in Shrewsbury and I stayed with my parents who lived locally and he stayed with somebody in Shrewsbury who was interested in end of life. And my mum said to me, "What are you doing? Why are you here with this American?" So I said, "Oh, we're talking about coaching people who are dying and grieving." And my mum said to me, "I think about dying a lot."
Mm.
And that opened up a conversation with my mother, who subsequently died during the first lockdown. Mm. And I am so grateful to Don that he opened my eyes to how to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Because as I've traveled through my personal journey since that time when we met him, I've had a number of losses, and I know that it's been different because of my viewpoint, my stance, and the things that I've been thinking about over time, really. It's very interesting, isn't it?
It is very interesting. Sue, I know you wanted to add something, but before you do, I was just going to pick up on what you were saying, because there's something about turning towards the subject rather than trying to fix it, trying to sort of reassure or be sympathetic. Turning towards it with a coaching stance, I really like that way of thinking about it. It's that, you know, I'm turning towards this with the understanding that I'm not trying to fix this.
Yeah,
I'm just there. It's a thinking space around this subject, and just making that shift in your mind as a coach, opens up the possibility of coaching somebody around this subject.
Yes, and. Yes, I was thinking along those lines, but also thinking about the specific context of the NHS, which is our biggest area of work, and how there's still a sort of taboo around death and dying. You know, that people will be, I think most doctors are trained in how to deliver difficult diagnoses and different prognoses, but there's not a great deal of preparation for talking with people when they are dying. And if somebody has experienced a bereavement, we are quite likely to recommend they go and see a bereavement counsellor or cruise or something, you know, that if that still exists. But we don't often take it on. And I wonder at some level whether death is seen as a failure. You know, death is a failure in the NHS. You know, our whole focus is about helping people be well and get better, and actually helping people to have a good death is not something that we think about. It's just sort of something that happens on the end that's pushed away and we don't deal with. I think sometimes I think perhaps our nursing colleagues are much better at this than we are, because they spend more time in more sort of intimate conversations with patients. But I was thinking about you, Claire, and your mum, and thinking that if we don't ask, we don't find out. So, you know, I wouldn't have thought in years gone by to ask a patient who was dying what they wanted to talk about. I really wouldn't have thought about opening up a conversation. It wouldn't have occurred to me. But the richness of that is quite extraordinary, really.
I agree. I had a conversation. I can think of a conversation I had with somebody who was dying when I was working as a GP, and I went on a home visit to him. He's quite near the end of his life. And as a GP, I would never have done this prior to this training, but as a GP using my coaching hat, I just said to him one day, "So you've had lots of time lying there," because, you know, he was in bed bound. I said, "You've got lots of time lying there to think. I'd love to hear what you're thinking about." And that opened up a completely different conversation about what was going on for him. And it opened up the possibility of him being able to work out what his goals were.
Mm.
Even though he only had a week or so to live, he did still have goals. He wanted to be able to have a particular conversation. He wanted to be able to comfortable in the sense of not having any pain. Those were his goals. They were different goals than you and I might regularly imagine as a coach, but they were nonetheless, they were still goals. And it enabled me to be much more focused in my role as a caregiver. And I think it was a really powerful conversation. And I think that also linked with what I had noticed in my life when I was with my sister, and that I noticed that some people, the most effective people in those conversations, came in, if you like, under the radar into the room with somebody who was end of life, came in slowly, came in differently, came in softly, and allowed a lot more space and a lot more time for the conversation, all of which Sue and I have brought into our training. So the sort of coaching that's involved is different from regular coaching because yes. It includes all of those things.
Yes, and we've made a distinction between coaching for loss and bereavement and coaching for end of life. So I was thinking about the way we coach generally in loss and bereavement is probably less challenging than we might coach in other situations. And it's more permission giving in some ways. And as we said earlier, you know, some overlap with counselling perhaps. And the other thing that we found is that the normalisation function of coaching in loss is really important because many people have not had significant bereavements before. They don't know what to expect. They have perhaps seen some sort of linear picturing of the grief process. And actually, most of us know it's not like that at all. It's a roller coaster. It hits you when you least expect it. And it's very comforting, I think, to have a conversation where you can understand that other people have felt like this. So I think that's as a coach around loss, that's a different sort of function. It's more of a mentoring in some way. It's more of a mentoring function.
And it's the normalizing thing. So probably 6 months after my mum died, Don and I were in contact about something else. And he said, we can talk about work in a minute, but how are you getting on your grief journey?
Hmm.
Which is such a lovely question. In fact, one other person asked me, well, a friend of mine is involved with YOLO, You Only Live Once.
Mm.
And she said exactly the same question to me. She said, so how's your grief journey then? Which is such a beautiful way of asking the question that's so different from how are you?
Mm. And particularly with that tone as well,
yeah.
That upbeat tone. It's not like, oh, how are you?
Mm.
You know, it allows you to just be how you are, doesn't it?
Yes.
But people stop asking, don't they, after a bit? There's a period of time where it's sort of considered to be acceptable to ask, and then they stop asking after a bit. And I mean, my sister died 7 years ago, I think it is now, and it feels very, very raw and like it's present at times, even now. And I would love to be asked occasionally how you're getting on with your grief journey, but people don't ask because they don't ask like that. They definitely don't ask like that.
Well, journey is a wonderful phrase, isn't it? Grief journey, because that gives us the forward and that we're moving with something.
Mm. And it's all right for me to say I'm stuck in a lay-by.
Yes.
But there's something about actually that normalizing the fact that there's movement potential.
Mm. And that does happen at the end of life as well, doesn't it? I was thinking again to what I think the hospices say, which is that we're alive until we're dead. So they're planning every day until, so it's not, it is a journey. And it can be an active and positive journey. It's not just, well, you're going to die, so everything closes down and, you know, let's just say hello until that happens.
I had, soon after we went on this journey, I had the great pleasure of visiting Don in America and followed him round. And I also facilitated one of his grief support groups. And then after that, I went to a department of primary care in Cincinnati to visit a relative. And he took me round the hospital. And I went into a ward in America in where they were discussing patients who were dying. And they were so caring, all of them so caring. And bearing in mind, I'd just come from Don and this, you know, his view on thinking about conversations at end of life along the lines that we're talking about. And in this room in America, talking about people who are dying, they were talking about a woman who was dying and she had a 16-year-old son. And they were really very concerned. You know, she was not very old and he was only 16 and they were all very concerned and upset. And there was lots of brainstorming around the room about what they could do to support the son. And one of them said, oh, there's this great camp where they provide support for children of dying parents. And somebody else suggested a kind of, you know, activities or memory box, all sorts of ideas. And it just occurred to me that nobody had actually had a conversation with either of them. You know, how are you getting on with your grief journey? Where are you with it? What's important to you right now? In, you know, given that there's limited time, what would you like to do in the next week? No one had done that. It was astonishing. But not because they didn't want to support. That's the thing. It's a bit like, you know, we think we're being supportive, but we're not. Yeah. And that's the shift here. I think that the realization that actually there are better ways of supporting.
Well, I think one of the things that we try and do in the training is help people have a structure about how to ask and be, don't we, with others. Because, you know, that phenomenon of people crossing the road, either literally or metaphorically, when something difficult's happened because they don't know what to say. So one of the things that we try and do is help people have a sort of framework of skills that they can use so that they're not baffled. You know, so grief journey is one of them, but there are other, you know, other ways that so that people feel contained by a structure.
And in the coaching at end of life course that we've run, we've had the great pleasure of working with actors. So the participants, who by the way don't have to be coaches, they could. And then we've had people on the courses who are, you know, carers, relatives, therapists, all kinds of people. So that we have great pleasure when the actor acts different. You know, somebody at in end of life, so they get an opportunity to practice these skills.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Pinging in. One of my emails pinging in the background, sorry.
We can't hear it, it's all right.
Oh.
So you're talking really about that fundamental principle in coaching, which is to ask people, because I heard you say, Naomi, that people were being really compassionately thinking deeply about what would work without asking.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think people are a bit scared of asking and not sure that somebody is going to know what the answer is. And certainly in both coaching for loss, but also coaching at end of life, people do need a bit more time, I think, to answer the questions. Because that's the other thing about this particular work is that it's slower.
Yeah.
So being asked, how are you doing, you know, you've recently had a big diagnosis, how are you doing with your grief and adjustment to that, could take a lot longer to respond to than, you know, how are you getting on with your particular role at work. You know, it could take somebody quite some time, partly because they've not been asked, but partly because it's an enormous question.
And they might, I guess, want to just sit with it for a while.
Yeah.
I can remember our neighbour was dying, and I spoke to his wife, and all credit to Don for the things I learned from him. And I just said to her, what are the things that you need to have talked to him about by the time he dies? And what are the things that are going to be really important for you to have done by the time he goes? And she said, I can't answer that question, but I'm going to sit with it. And you know, the gift that we can offer to people of actually even naming the question, I think, is really important.
And sometimes it can be really a bit like Sue was saying earlier. Sometimes people find there's a value in a kind of mentoring at that point.
You
know, other people have found it really helpful to consider how to say I love you, or I forgive you, or goodbye even. Because one of the things people often say is, in a complex grief where part of the reason it is complex is because they haven't done those things.
Yeah.
So being encouraged to at least be aware that those are the sorts of things that it might be useful to think about, both for the person who's supporting, but also for the person who's dying, can be really helpful.
And there's a very big piece of information giving about how people want to share how they're feeling, because going back to the scenario where somebody crosses the road to avoid, you know, people will say, well, I didn't want to mention it, I didn't want to upset her, she's, you know, they'll say, oh, she's doing really well, you know, she's not crying, she's not talking about it anymore. And there's an assumption that actually to say how are you might stir things up again, whereas actually it's the opposite often, isn't it? Because most of us going through stuff know that it's there all the time, whether or not we're talking about it or focusing on it, it's there. And we usually welcome the opportunity to have a conversation about it. But I'm not sure that, I think there's quite a lot of fear about bringing up loss and death. So we need to help people understand that.
Which is what you do.
Hopefully.
So what's on offer, and who can come, and how do they find out about it?
Well, we run 1, 2, and 3 day courses, usually split so they stand alone. The first day is usually coaching for loss and bereavement. And the second day is coaching at end of life, as Naomi was saying, with actors, so we can act that out. And then the third day is usually sometime later to consolidate the learning and to, you know, bring questions and so on. And it's open to pretty much anybody who wants to do it. It's not necessary to know about coaching. We've had, as Naomi said, really any number of healthcare professionals, pharmacists, social workers, psychotherapists, patients, relatives. And actually the mix is better. I think we probably both think it works better not segregating into, as it were, consumers and patients and carers and healthcare professionals. And run those usually in central London.
Thank you.
Yes, although as you know, as everybody, we have converted all our courses onto Zoom.
Yeah.
So we run them on Zoom as well. In order to find out about them, we advertise them on our website, which is coachdoc.co.uk. And we're in the process of programming our courses for next year. So watch this space.
Thank you so much. And I'll put contact details and everything in the programme notes for people to have a look at. So okay. Do you have a final word as we finish?
Oh.
Well, mine would be, I think, about remember we're living our dying, and that can be positive. It's a positive journey. And, you know, I come back to Jung, who said that if we think we've reached the end, we've missed the point. The journey is the whole point. So I would say, let's remember we're all living our dying.
Thank you, Sue.
And I think for me, just very much on the same point, and I think you may have said it earlier, Sue, actually, which is that we are alive until we're dead. So even if we're very close to death, we're still alive.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. So thank you for coming, Naomi and Sue, and thanks everyone for listening. I'm Claire Pedrick, and I've been in conversation with Naomi Craft and Sue Morrison. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please share the podcast with a friend who might also be interested. And if you'd like to become one of our regulars at the Coaching Inn, you can subscribe at Podbean or on iTunes. We look forward to meeting you on the next podcast.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com.